Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
In the swirling turmoil of the 1960s, a narrative darker and more intricate than previously imagined begins to emerge, casting shadows over the era's most infamous of crimes. A web of intrigue that suggests the possibility of Charles Manson, the murderous cult leader, being manipulated by forces far more sophisticated than the traditional narrative leads us to believe. From the depths of MKUltra's mind control experiments to shadowy figures operating behind the scenes, hints of a sinister confluence of interests where the counterculture movement and covert government experience on mind control eerily overlap. Were the horrific acts perpetrated by Manson's followers the outcome of a twisted ideology, or were they manipulated by unseen hands skilled in the art of psychological warfare? This case file, join the theorists as they dig into the dark dialogue of this chilling chronicle, exploring the sinister symbiosis between cult dynamics and secret government projects in the MKUltra Charles Manson Connection.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 310.
I instantly wasn't sure if I like, how did I, what do I, what's the count? Do I say 310 or 310?
Either would have 310 been acceptable, but you had to go for both.
Both
310? I've never said 300, like, yeah. and then.
Well, I feel like I would have said case file 300, 301.
310
just
does not.
I don't think you've ever said 301. 310 just doesn't roll off the tongue.
310. We're talking Charlie Manson and the MKUltra connection. CIA, hashtag deep state.
Let's put all the hashtags in there.
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
And I'm Andrew.
I'm Dan.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think that's why we're not trending. We don't say enough hashtags in the show.
We do fucking hashtags, because all of a sudden I've been in charge of posting the social media videos, and this fucking app. Mm-hmm. So Braden has these like pre-made hashtag groupings, and you can use them like once, and then you go to do it again. It's like this is too similar to the one you posted last week. Like, and he gets so mad that finally at the end of these fucking things I had to post, it's like, what did Dan's talking about Mountain Dew? And I'm like, hashtag, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Hashtag diabetes. Hashtag insulin dependent diabetic. Yeah, hashtag yeah. Ozempic. Like, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck is right for this anymore. And I hate it.
I was a little upset that you said, you didn't say, I don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, yeah. Did you see?
You know what I mean? That would have worked. I saw because I had to fix all the posts because they were double scheduled. They were double booked, but it's all good. That was easy. I just had to delete them. So I did actually read that one. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, some person, like looking up their health.
I didn't get a sponsorship.
First few were okay. And then I was just like, I hate this. I fucking hate this.
Oh, it's Twitter or X or whatever. X is the one that's always like the second you have a secondary post that's similar. And someone hashtag is like, this post is too similar for X's new privacy policy guidelines.
They're trying to cut down on bots or some shit.
Yeah. And I'm like, God damn. I'm like,
for that fucking app. It's maddening.
Oh, yeah. Gotta make it so difficult.
Honestly, what I used to do when I get too angry, I would just uncheck the X box and be like, fuck X.
We're pretty weak on social media. Yeah, like, our social media game is weak as fuck, but it's probably the weakest on X.
Yeah.
Like, by far.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. X is not going to give it to you.
It's not our space. Go anywhere else. X is for murder and porn. Like that. What else is on there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I get a lot of murder on Instagram. Still.
So can we doing porn, or should we start doing porn or murder? Like which?
Whatever.
Well, anybody saw whatever our sells, porn, Dan. They'd want to murder themselves, I think. So.
Two in one. Yeah, you see one.
Hashtag, I don't want to see this anymore. Hashtag, gouge my eyes out.
I don't want to do this anymore. We're talking Charlie. I don't think we ever have specifically talked about Charlie Manson. Manson?
Full disclosure, I've never talked about Charlie Manson ever in my life. I've never had any interest.
Dan never talked about psychopath, cult leader, murderer guy?
I've never talked about it. When looking up, researching for this is the first time I've ever looked into Charlie Manson.
Dan, like, at all. He never killed anyone. No. So he doesn't even fit your parameters of guys you don't like. He's never killed anyone.
Well,
I was, but it's a serial murder case. So it's not, he's not a serial killer, but it's a serial murder case, I suppose. So the first time I was ever looking up this stuff, all the information that I looked up for this is the first time I've ever looked into.
Dan, it's okay. We have your loop on standby just in case.
Just I got the case. Loop of Dan wearing his fucking Guy Fieri hat.
Yeah, on just standby. Put that on there. Just the still of that one. Yeah. Just Photoshop some sunglasses on and Flavor Town. Yeah. And that's it. We're good. I don't know if it's... I guess we have to go into a little background of who.
Well, there might Charles be fucking people Manson like you is, here that have like, no idea really, about Charles Manson, so you have to.
I guess, yeah. I don't. Yeah, people who are like, you know what? I've never really listened to Charlie Manson. Let me listen to an alien podcast about Charles Manson. Charles Miles Manson. That is a great middle name, I guess. Everybody was named Miles, right? Born November 12th in Cincinnati, Ohio, to apparently Kathleen Mannix, who was a 16-year-old single mother. At the time,
I don't know. It was like, was that as frowned upon when in 1934 today?
They were getting married a little younger, but she like my favorite part about this situation. Not that she's like some child bride, but the fact that she had been impregnated by a colonel, and it's like, oh, okay, and like, but no, not an actual colonel. The guy's name was Colonel. So, like, what
the fuck? Your dad's a colonel.
Colonel Sanders, right? Yeah.
So, that's great.
Manson was actually heir to this KFC secret recipe. I guess in most cases, Manson's mother is actually characterized as being neglectful in his early life. And so a lot of it
Could you imagine if your mother was 16 years old? I was a huge dipshit when I was 16.
I mean, yeah.
I'd be like, can I feed my kid with these Pokemon cards? Like,
she obviously wasn't making the... She wasn't obviously making the best choices either at 16 if she has a baby.
So Charles was pretty much bounced from home to home, apparently spending more time at relatives' house than actually with his relatives and then friends of his mother than with his actual mother. And so at the age of 5 in 1939, apparently Manson's mother was sentenced to prison for armed robbery.
So not a real good choices. Situation.
Still making the best choices. Yeah.
Dude, she's 21 and she's just fucking Bonnie, committing armed robbery. No, Clyde,
doing it by herself. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just her and a baby, a dart and a baby in her arm.
And as she's sent off to prison, Manson sent down country roads to West Virginia to live with his strictly religious aunt and uncle at the time.
This is going to end well.
So in 1942, his mother is released from prison, and then Manson goes back to live with her and, you know, a collection of a series of like rundown hotels and just like places that normally that
she plays like a fucking movie.
It's sad though, too, because like when she went to jail, supposedly his life kind of went on, like got on track. Like things were like, he was going to school, he was learning, he was happy. They were like a nice religious family that kind of, you know, got him in a good spot. And then all of a sudden,
5 years old, he had structure finally.
It starts going when he starts living back with his mother, and it seems like his life falls off at this point. He starts getting into things like around the age of 13, he runs away from home and ends up apparently supporting himself through just petty crime. Like he goes out and commits like small, you know.
I just think of myself like little pudgy 13-year-old Braden trying to commit any kind of petty crime. I'd be like crying. I'd feel so guilty. Like, There's no way.
You just said you weren't a young Zell, because I know Zell was running fucking Walmart fraud schemes. For sure.
I'd be stealing newspapers left and right, hawking them on the corner.
No problem. Way too much of a pussy to steal shit.
What's the equivalent of Walmart in 1947?
I don't know, Piggly Wigglies or something. Like
that. I'd be stuffing my pockets for sure.
Woolworths, I guess. Sears.
You just have to do it, stuff your pockets, buy something, and then walk out.
You don't feel as guilty, or that's just
like, I already bought something.
You stuff your pockets. You spend a dollar on something. Back down. Well, whatever, a nickel, whatever it is back then.
I'm not stealing this because I have to. I'm stealing because I can. That's the whole thing. It's a fucking power move for you, hey?
And then you sell it when you leave the store. Right. In front of the store that you just sold it from for half the price.
Yeah. Are you going in there? I got a deal.
So his life of petty crime goes on hiatus as they actually ends up getting caught at some point. And then he's sent to a all-boys school in Indiana, which is actually run by Catholic priests.
Never good. And That's where you want to be as a 13-year-old boy, as a
troubled boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With no parents to turn to. Yeah. In the hands of, in the soft hands of the Catholic priests, as we all know, they have just the touch when it comes to, when it comes to kids.
A real good track record. Teenage boys, I suppose. But Manson escapes.
Thank God.
After 10 months.
Tells me he wasn't running very fast, more of a waddle, but poor kid. Oh, yeah.
Was he a fat kid?
I was referring to him being molested.
That's from the anal rape, is what he's saying.
Oh, okay. All right.
By the Catholic priest.
Got it. Okay. So, again, I don't know if they mentioned
this. I don't know if he was molested, but I mean, like, Occam's razor in this situation.
I imagine it wasn't good.
Yeah. How we ended up, must have happened.
So the following year, Manson's escalates his life of petty crime, and apparently he's arrested in Indianapolis for burglary, and then he's sent to Boys Town, which is a juvenile facility in Nebraska.
Child fucking boy band for sure. Boys Town? That's a fucking boy band.
Yes. Yeah.
Is Boys Town just this is just sparking a memory for me on another case we did. Is Boys Town like a countrywide like program?
Like a chain Boys Town? Things?
Yeah, is it a chain? Because for some reason I remember talking about another case file that had to do with some missing like trafficked boys, that had to do with Boys Town. I don't know why that's ringing a bell for me so much. It's just an interesting thought that when I read that, I was like, oh, he went there. I was like, I'm pretty sure that
it
had some
singular thing. I've always heard of Boys Town. Like it just sits in there, but maybe I heard it like you're going to Boys Town or something like that. I don't know. I just heard it somewhere.
Boys Town's back. All right.
So he escapes from Boys Town this time after only 4 days. He actually I guess he escapes with another boy at the time, and then they go and commit 2 robberies on their way to this other boy's. I guess they're going to
another town,
his uncle's home. At some point.
Yeah. No. It has okay, you guys remember the Franklin child prostitution ring had to do in that's from Omaha, Nebraska, that had to do with Boys Town.
Yeah.
So he was in that same facility later. Like,
come on down to Boys Town.
I would be like, there's very, like, I mean, that tracks. I'm like, you have a facility that
has lost boys.
Yeah, that has like troubled boys, and you know, there's probably not a lot of oversight. Like at that point, like you're just throwing those kids in there and just being like, nobody really cares. People don't care about those kids. So, I mean, yeah. So now in 1949, right after that, Manson's actually caught, and then he's sent to Indiana Boys School.
Have a fucking dog, the bounty hunter, that goes after these kids?
Just track them down. The truant officers or whatever. Yeah, just tracking them down. Seymour Skinner just tracking down Charles Manson's, chucking
like
him
it's
into
crazy
because
like you go through this and count, and what is he? He's like fucking 16 at this time? How many times has this kid been to jail?
Yeah. Already since 13, like on, he's just been in various, you know, you could classify some of these reform schools as
that's what it is. Like it's an alternative.
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. Any of these places, they say reform schools, but they're basically like prisons. Yeah, it's just like they throw him in here. Apparently, he escapes from the Indiana boys school like several times. And then, but at, like even during those times, like being brought back, he experiences apparently being brutalized by both the staff and other, you know, other kids that were staying there. So, you know, it's he's just been bounced from place to place. Bad situation after bad situation, and then you're in here. So in 1951, he has another escape attempt from Indiana Boys School, and then he's actually transferred to National Training School for Boys in Washington, D.C. And then here is where a psychiatrist actually, you know, gives him an assessment and kind of, I guess, deems him aggressively antisocial, which is...
yeah.
That's a big surprise, I guess.
Yeah. Well, if everybody's brutalizing you, how are you going to? I don't think I'd be very social. Right? Like, what are you going to fucking do? Who are you going to talk to?
Yeah.
The fucking Catholic priests?
It's not like you've been in any.
Kids that are beating you up? Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's not like you would have any kind of structure your whole, like, young adult life.
Well, for fucking. Well, his mom was in jail for, like, what, 3 years or 6 months or something? Like, oh, it's sad.
So mostly up to this point, he's still kind of committing mostly like petty crimes and whatnot. And so, but in 1952, he actually, this is where he actually gets brought up in his first serious criminal conviction, where at the age of 17, he was caught and convicted for federal crimes, where, at least taking a stolen car across state lines. So, I mean, once you cross state lines, it's federal. Like, so then he's sent to Washington, D.C.'s National Training School for Boys.
Which is like, it's crazy because it, all of a sudden, like, we're going to get into a series of these crimes where it's all of a sudden through his entire life, you know, he's in and out of jail or juvenile halls, whatever you want to call it. And then all of a sudden it's like, he's doing this petty crime, but just doing enough to make it a federal crime, right? Like this, like he stole a car, which should, you know, it's you slap on the wrist, go to back to a juvenile hall, but he crosses state lines. And then the next thing he's going to do is he's going to fucking break into a mailbox and steal fucking mail, right? He could have stole the letter from anything else other than a federal mailbox. But since he stole it from a federal mailbox, what is that? Oh, it's a federal fucking crime. So all of a sudden, federal these crime. Petty,
I mean, yeah.
Well, these petty crimes the are suddenly turning to federal, you know. Federal crimes. And he's doing like extensive times for fucking bullshit charges.
Well, I mean, that's a federal crime, Andrew. Not a bullshit car. Mail's got to get
but what
delivered.
I'm kind of insinuating. It's like almost like it's intentionally like you're going to do this small thing, but we're going to make it federal so we can spend time.
I'm going to make it wait. He's also 17. Yeah. Were people tried as adults younger back then?
Yeah, I think it usually depends on state. Depends.
I bet they're probably looking at his record. They're just like, fuck this kid.
Lock this kid up.
Yeah, he's nothing but problems.
I mean, with that history, I mean, I'm sure they were like, yeah, this kid's a lost cause at that point. You know, sad that he's probably written off at that point.
Right now, you could steal a car, put it on a fucking shipping container on a train. It goes to wherever. You get nothing.
Yeah, you can jump in someone's unlocked Tacoma that has a keys in the ignition, drive it to the port, and ship it to the Taliban.
I changed that fucking ignition, fucker. They towed it. I just seen on the news not that long ago, guy got his car stolen. He had an air tag in it. He tracked it to a shipping yard. It's in a container. He calls the cops and the cop says, nothing we can do. He's like, it's in the container. And then the train leaves.
So shitty.
And it's gone.
That's so funny.
Nothing happened. He found his car, couldn't get it back. Poor guy.
Dude, Charlie Manson would be fucking living large today.
He'd be the middleman between the Taliban and wherever he's fucking.
Well, hey, listen, we'll get into it, but that was his plan, was to take the Manson family to the desert. So,
yeah.
There you go.
So in 1954, this is where Manson starts transitioning into his adult criminal behavior phase, I suppose. And so he's actually transferred to a minimum security institution named Natural Bridge Honor Camp, and which is a facility for younger offenders. And this apparently is where his kind of, I guess here's where they start kind of seeing like his ability to manipulate and like charm authorities, or having like he seems to have like a way of getting kind of lesser charges. Like he's not going up on super serious charges. He seems to be either, you know, manipulating these the authorities to be like, okay, like,
you know. Well, the other side of the coin of that is like, you got to think like, this is a really young man with like an insanely troubled history. So you got to imagine at some point that they're looking at this and they're like, they're kind of looking at it and they're like, man, this kid's really got fucked up. And I know, like, especially today, like in today's day and age, like sending like kids to youth jail is like the last thing they want to do, because it's like the last
hardening resort the criminal.
Well, yeah, because they're like, that's the like, you're going to go to jail. And that's like the last thing of like this bad. But the problem is like a lot of these kids, and I don't know what it was like in 1955, but they'll go there and then they go, oh, this ain't bad. Structure, safe, food. Well,
at this point, it's all he knows. You know,
kids their own age. Yeah. And then it's like, it becomes like hey, I don't mind it. And then when they come back, they're fucking nightmares, right? To deal with, because they want.
Well, not everyone's a nightmare. It's just like, you know, like Ricky, Trailer Park Boys, likes to go to jail during the winter.
Makes sense.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Hot and caught, buddy.
Continue some more crime. Yeah.
Great hockey league, yeah. Too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great ball hockey league.
So 1955, you know, the following year, Manson is released on parole. He manages to you know, worm his way out of it, but apparently he takes to crime once again, and he engages in a number of activities, including things like pimping is one of the charges that is leveled at him, and also passing forged checks. So under those circumstances, and he gets caught, you know, his parole is revoked, and then this will go on. He kind of just has this repeating cycle of releases, and he's in and out of prison, it seems like, which is, you know, like looking at this, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. You go in and out of jail, and it's like, nobody was like, hey, fucking lock this guy up. Like, it's
fine. Well, and a lot of the times the state has like a step up principle where it's like, you commit the, you know, you go out, you breach your probation, you do another crime, similar crime. They're just like, all right, double the time, motherfucker. Like, it's not like Canada where each crime is looked at as a separate event. Right. And so you can actually do the same crime and get a lesser sentence the second time. There's a step up principle where they're just like, fuck you. Go to jail and stay there. And this guy just is seemingly in and out of prison, breaching probation or parole nonstop his entire life. Like, he out.
It's
backing,
that fucking
backing.
The Barney one where he's going into Moe's and he just comes in and out. You know that fucking meme? Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So, but he eventually runs into like a stint in, he does a stint in prison where this is apparently is where he starts kind of, I guess you could say, setting the stage for his transformation.
His overnight messiah.
That's like into like the transformation. His cult leaders. Yeah. He starts kind of establishing this cult leader, charisma. Personality, and you know, this would go on until, you know,
well, it's like, so this drops. Is the first time he's done actual serious, like, hard time. Like, so he's been in fucking jail for 7 years for this infraction, right? so he's in jail for 7 years, like Dan said. This is where he becomes the Charlie Manson that everybody kind of knows and is scared of. As soon as he gets released from jail, the first thing he does is he violates his parole, right? So he's paroled in LA. First thing he does when he gets out of prison after 7 years is fucking head up towards the Bay Area and go to San Francisco, reports to their parole offices, hey, I want a parole officer here. And they're like, buddy, that's not how it fucking works. Like,
they literally, his parole, he did not report to parole in LA. He was released with a condition. You, like, basically, you are to reside in LA. You're going to report in LA and then report, you know, as... and when needed. And he's just like, see you later. Goes to the Bay Area, which is, like Andrew said,
violation.
instant breach. He's instantly violated that parole. He did not give it any respect. Zero. Back in jail.
That's the thing. 100%. So as soon as he says, he's like, yeah, no, I want a parole officer. They find out that he's breached his parole. So they arrest him on the spot. And then all of a sudden, these parole records, this trail just goes completely fucking cold. And we don't hear anything until... the papers start again, and he gets a brand new parole officer in San Francisco, just like that. He ends up getting assigned to Roger Smith, who was a criminologist at Berkeley, who was also a drug researcher that worked at the university, but apparently is working as a parole officer to pay for his schooling. Like there, it's kind of weird there, right? And not only is he working for as a researcher, and he, I guess Dan will go into it, I'm sure, but he's one of his main areas of study when in the criminology is like gang mentalities, drug use, and like, you know, he's a lot of it he's been focusing on like the Black Panthers and that type of stuff. And, you know, he ends up working out of this clinic, this free clinic that's funded by the government. This is a government-funded medical clinic, right? He starts working, doing his parole visits out of this free medical clinic. And this clinic also rents out a room in this free government-funded clinic to Jolly West. And if that name sounds familiar to you, yes, that's the man that killed the fucking elephant with LSD.
Yeah, he's a huge proponent like in MKUltra. Proven.
Right, like proven correspondence between him and now, Sidney Gottlieb. Like these files exist. We know they do. Jolly West has denied it, you know, or did deny it his entire life, but we have like this hard evidence of this.
They have written correspondence between them. Like it, the silver bullet, basically. But like, just back to how he gets on with Roger Smith, like, because people have tried to dig into, like,
exist.
You know, right? The records don't exist. Yeah, and they're like, you know, had Manson at this point, like he was looking at like a longer sentence. He was going to get sentenced again for breaching that parole. He would likely be in there for a long time. At this point, and it's what happens and how he's allowed to stay in the Bay Area basically breaches every protocol existing at the time. They have no idea how he would get arrested, zero record of arrest, zero record of the breach of parole, and then all of a sudden just assigned to a new parole officer in the Bay Area.
All around the same time. Well, and all around the same time that this is when like the Manson family is starting to be created. Like he has his first follower. This guy just was in jail, you know, for 7 years, and all of a sudden he's already winning people over. He's got women that follow him to this clinic for his parole check-ins that literally they're opening the doors for him. They're picking shit up from him. They're basically his slaves. And I'll tell you what, it's not because of his fucking music, because his music's awful, right? Like he's a short little scrug, you know what?
It's like scruggly, 5'7" right scraggly yeah. little fucker. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's not a handsome dude. Like it's bizarre how he just becomes this overnight fucking messiah. And then it's also interesting too. Like the Haight-Ashbury Clinic opened in 1967. So the same year that Manson was released from jail. It's also the exact same year that the government started the Operation COINTELPRO, which was based in San Francisco, and Operation Chaos.
What's Operation Chaos?
It's very kind of goes well here. The interesting thing about Chaos is what they assume is it was a similar project to COINTELPRO, which is like destabilizing, I think was the Black Panthers. Yeah,
they're infiltrating the Black Panthers and all that.
But there's no information on Chaos. They've never been able to get any documentation or anything. They don't know who the fuck was in it, anything like that.
So this,
it's the one that's been completely like tight-lipped.
Don't they think... I mean, I might be mixing COINTELPRO and Chaos, but don't they think Chaos is attributed to like 30 deaths of like high-ranking Black Panther officials by them just basically stoking fires between rival agencies?
Like, well, from what rivals? I understand, I think that's COINTELPRO because from what I read, I could be wrong though, is that they don't have any valid information. Like they don't have any hard, tangible evidence for Chaos really.
Yeah.
So
what it did.
There's a lot. I mean, we talked about it at length when we did COINTELPRO, but we have a lot of documentation on COINTELPRO and how a lot of it, I mean, we talked about how it essentially just wiped out almost like an entire generation of like Black community leaders at some point. Like it's either, you know, ruined them either financially or, you know, some of them were shot and killed that were like in police shootings that shouldn't have happened.
And the only reason we know about that is by pure fucking luck.
It was burglary, right? They broke
burglared and found the fucking papers that basically leaked that. But like, had that not happened, that probably we don't know about COINTELPRO today.
So this clinic opens in 67. It's it attracts like hippies and other like counterculture community members. It's also the same time that Manson gets his new parole officer, Roger Smith. It all just happens in this year.
Well, it's interesting too. So they have this free clinic in the Haight-Ashbury clinic. And then we know that we have Jolly West that's renting this basically an apartment in the building, right? And we have documentation that shows like part of it. So Jolly West is taking a leave from, I think he was working at the University of Oklahoma at the time, takes a leave, comes out. And the whole reason for them renting this apartment is to do basically a research on the hippie movement. So what he has is he has graduate students that come to work for him. And the whole point of this is for them to blend in. He tells them, like, grow your hair long, dress like a fucking hippie, you know, using drugs is encouraged. Like, the whole point of this place was to make it look like a hippie crash pad.
Mm.
Right? So they would go out, his graduate students, and kind of recruit people to come back to this apartment to hang out, to be studied by Jolly West.
Yeah, it was very like when you think about like the tactics, really reminded me of kind of like Midnight Climax, where they're just like, yeah, this is all cool. And you come back to this like basically bugged apartment where they're like, they're watching you. You're just not having sex with prostitutes in this one. But they're like basically studying and gathering information from everyone that comes in the
building. Well, we're not that far removed from like MK Ultra.
No,
this is MK Ultra.
Like was MK Ultra like a little earlier though? Like 64?
Well, it started earlier. It started in the 30s, so, but this is...
So this is a continuation. This is part of MK Ultra.
Well, this is basically when they started keeping things, I think, a little bit better under wraps, or try to anyways, because a lot of this ended up getting leaked.
Crazy. But
the other interesting thing too is like we have this guy who's become this overnight messiah. He's got his family. He's going to see this parole officer regularly. And this fucking guy, his entire life, no matter what, couldn't stay the fuck out of jail. Like he just couldn't. There's no way to keep him out of jail. And at this point in time in his life, you couldn't keep him in jail. At this point in time, Charles Manson became more valuable outside of jail than inside of jail to these people, because he's getting picked up for more prostitution. He's getting picked up for rape. He's getting picked up. Manson family members are getting picked up for like dosing fucking kids and trying to recruit them. Like he's still getting picked up, but none of these charges are sticking. And every single one of these things are violating his parole massively.
And literally every charge that comes through, it's basically like someone's like he's released, and when questioned, like, "Hey, how come this guy's getting out?" They go, "It's above my pay grade. I don't know." Right, and so like no one really knows how he's just basically in and out, right? And it's like the only like you think about that now, like you think about that in today's terms of like someone like who like gets released like that, like right away you think of like some sort of like confidential informant. Right, like a CI. Absolutely. who's working or undercover, who's getting in. Like you can't have them in because you want them out in this community you're trying to gather information from. Because literally nothing sticks to the guy, like zero charge. All of a sudden, like he's just, you can't keep this guy in jail. It's wild.
He's invincible at this point in time, and it's crazy because this, like, I think just does nothing but add to his. Like his ego and the mystique of Charles Manson, right? Like you can't.
I'm untouchable.
Yeah. And I'm sure he believed that at some point, right?
And his like followers
they'd have police respond to the Spawn Ranch, which like, have you guys seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah. I haven't, like, but.
Oh, dude.
Good movie.
I think it's Tarantino's best work, personally.
It's phenomenal.
But he's got this giant, it basically used to be a this ranch where they'd film spaghetti westerns, right? And now there's this old man, I forget his first name, something Spawn, but this old man that lives on the property that Charlie's basically like, I will lend you some of the women in the Manson family to spend time with you if you let us fucking live here.
Mm.
So they basically take over this man's fucking ranch and start doing like horse tours and shit like that with people. But the police would regularly respond to this ranch because they're doing drugs, doing crazy shit. People are being brought there against their will, whatever. And they'd come and Charlie Manson would just be like, hey, listen, like I've got fucking snipers up in these mountains. Like you're not doing shit. Right? Like this guy literally thought he was invincible.
Wild.
Well, he was. And for some reason, someone at some level of government was basically being like, let him out. Right? Like that's the only explanation for him just never being kept in custody is that someone somewhere is going, nope, release him. Like making a phone call, release him. Let him out.
He did more time when he was 13.
Like, yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Right? Like, I don't know. So do you want to get into Jolly West a little bit now, Dano, or do you want to take a break?
Yeah, we could just take it. We get a little bit deeper into Jolly West after we take this break.
All right. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Look, you like Dan, you got a trip to Thailand coming up and you want to impress the locals? Well, then you want Rosetta Stone. It's been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 different languages offered. It's got fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. Rosetta Stone has amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
Sure, there's competitors to Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta Stone offers more languages and a lifetime membership. You could go over to Babbel and get 60% off, but it's not for a lifetime. That's why we're promoting Rosetta Stone today. All right, Theorites, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Alien Theorist Theorizing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your damn life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today or look for the link in the show notes. Peace!
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
So Jolly West is kind of becomes pivotal to this theory, being that he is the kind of connection. I mean, he's the direct connection to MK Ultra. Like if you're going to tie Manson somehow to like actual MK Ultra, like this would be the guy that you do it. Now in 1969, West was actually he became the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at UCLA, and he pretty much he would hold that position for 20 years. Like he'd be there for two decades, and pretty much it became the leading center for research on things like mental health, which also included a lot of studies on the effects of LSD, since that was his specialty. I mean, this is the guy who Braid mentioned before. He dosed an elephant.
Andrew mentioned that, but I'll take credit.
How much do you have to dose the elephant to have a fucking effect on an elephant?
Talk about it, actually.
Because, what's the elephant, fucking 5,000-pound animal?
And we're just like, yeah, we're going to...
We're talking nanograms here, nanogram strips. Yeah. Like, what are you just doing up? You're just getting a whole roll of LSD and putting it in his water.
But it's like that, that MPI, like that national, or his neuropsychiatric institute, which
2,800 milligrams.
Jeez. Milligrams?
2,800 milligrams over 11 minutes.
Dude, these were fucking wild.
You just see the elephants, pupils just dilate, just
until they explode.
Until you just fucking pass out and heart explodes and dies. Jesus.
This large dose was not effective and may have contributed to the animal's death.
That seems an excessive amount.
It wasn't effective because it was dead.
Poor fucking animal, man. Jesus. We don't endorse dosing animals.
No.
Listen, Jolly West is the only person to ever get an elephant to forget. All right.
Forget how to live.
So they would focus on things like LSD, but not just that. Like they also stuff like behavior modification and also the psychology of cult and extremist groups, which if you had access to someone like Charles Manson and you were aware of him, he would be an extremely interesting case study, at least to either keep an eye on or perhaps even establish a relationship with.
Well, yeah. I mean, like we were, Andrew, you kind of touched base on before, is that there's documented letters from Jolly West that describe his breakthroughs in using LSD and these for even he says like implanting thoughts that aren't their own and memories that didn't happen, and not having them remember me implanting these memories. And, you know, he claims he can make people forget things. And he also claims that, you know, he can make people go insane. Like, he's like, I have the formula to...
We have fucking evidence of that with fucking Jack Ruby.
I was just going to say Jack Ruby, after he killed Kennedy, was like, what? How did I get here? What did I do? We had no idea. Or at least, that's what he said.
Well, but not only that, Zell, fucking Jolly West volunteered to be his fucking his psychotherapist in prison. And when he went and did an assessment on him, he left and was like, yep, he's insane. And literally when he left, like Jack Ruby, who all accounts have been sane his entire life, never had any mental illnesses, anything like that, was literally going off about the fucking Holocaust and how there's children on fire outside his jail cell and shit.
He Jolly West goes, yeah, it's crazy. You can't even talk to the guy. He's having audio and visual hallucinations. Wild. Something that was not logged by any therapist before he entered the room. And this guy has one single visit. And meanwhile, he has detailed letters detailing how you could try to macrodose other world leaders by putting LSD on cigars and shit in various ways to make these people go insane with this drug.
On anything that's going to touch their skin or their lips or anything, you could fucking drug someone with LSD. Well,
and this guy is such a piece of shit because he's like, so Sidney Gottlieb, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was like the head of MKUltra, right? He's the head scientist involved in MKUltra, whatever, in this time frame with Jolly West. So you have these correspondence between them in these files that were found in the University of California, I think it was. And they have this correspondence where Jolly West is writing back to Sidney Gottlieb being like, it is fucking perfect because these people are already on drugs and mentally ill. So no one has any idea that we're testing on them, and it's fucking perfect. If they act, or if they're acting bizarrely, we can just completely attribute it to the fact that they're already mentally ill. It's like, that's so fucked up. And this is a therapist. Like, this is fucked. He's taking the most vulnerable people and using them as guinea pigs, right? Like, that's, and, oh my God.
And like with Jolly West and like that correspondence, you start to think about like, you know, especially for me, I start to think like, you know, you have this guy who's, you know, charismatic, who's in jail his whole life. And all of a sudden he cannot get put back in jail, no matter what he does. And you have this like Jolly West, they're all in the same fucking building at a time. It makes me think that did Jolly West either administer or show Charlie Manson how to dose people in order for them to have to be more susceptible to, you know, insert thoughts in their head? Did Jolly West kind of show Manson this? Because then you look at like what you, Andrew said earlier, is like some of the Manson family were out drugging kids to try to get them to be part of the family, right? So it's like you have Jolly West, who says he's perfected this, knows how to do it. He's maybe teaching Manson how to do it, and Manson's like not doing a good job teaching these fucking skids.
Is trying not, to how do we know that he's not doing a good job? He's basically doing exactly what they're doing. He's dosing him with LSD, and at the same time, like it was a known fact that Manson would dose his followers with LSD and refrain from taking it himself, or if he would take it, he would take tiny doses.
I mean, that brings me to my question of LSD as a mind control substance, because if you've ever done LSD, it's...
Someone tells me you have.
No, never. Never, not once.
No? Not even, you never tried it?
Never. Not, never done it?
In 1800 years, I've never tried it once.
Well, it's only been around for 60 years, so...
Zell's been straight edge since 1850.
No, we were doing ergot root or whatever before. That's what it was.
That was the cool thing.
But as like a mind control thing, if you, like LSD, like a hallucinogen, like it puts you like in a different dimension. Same with like psilocybin, like mushrooms. So at what dose, I guess, is it become like a, because when you're on it, you're just like, you're in like a euphoric state, kind of like you're experiencing reality in a different way. You're seeing, depending on how much you do, kaleidoscopes or like claymation or like weird lines in just reality itself. But are you more coerced? Like, can you be coerced or like brainwashed while on it?
Well, yeah. Jolly West was also specialized in he was a hypnotist. So he was a therapist and he was a hypnotist, right? So
like
he
going crazy on it, like on a, on a extreme dose, like putting, making someone go insane.
Well,
that,
he,
that makes sense.
Jolly West, like he actually, I think one of his specialties was not brainwashing in the sense that he was brainwashing people. Like we don't have, you know, there's not definite evidence of that, but they're saying that he worked with victims. Like he worked with like people who were coming back from like the Korean War, like people who POWs or stuff like that. It was saying that he had worked with them at some point. And it sounds like early, like when I was going into it, it sounds like early days stuff, kind of the stuff that they're trying now with veterans with like PTSD, where they were, you know, they're microdosing, you know, or using, you know, shrooms or and whatnot, various
drugs are good, okay.
To be like to kind of, you know, these were early days where it's like, you know, they're just figuring out. It's like, hey, we might be able to do this to help these people in some help. Way.
Funny, this Jolly West was trying to create Manchurian candidates. There's nothing you can do to tell me otherwise.
That's what I think too. I 100%. I think he was, yeah. Well.
There's no way you give someone LSD, like when you say you just created LSD and you're doing like clinical trials and you give it to someone, you're like, this is beneficial.
For us to turn them into a killing machine.
This is beneficial for this person to just turn them. Like, because at a point, like, yeah, like regular doses, it lasts for what, 8, 10, 12 hours, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, not 2,800 milligrams.
But at, well, yeah, they dose LSD in like, I think it's nanograms. So like, that would be like a 250 nanograms would be like .00025 milligrams. So if they're giving 2,500 milligrams to an elephant.
That's my question. Like, what's the point of doing this, like mind controlling an elephant so you can ride them like fucking Hannibal and storm Rome? Like, what's the fucking point of this?
I don't know. The elephant thing just doesn't make sense to me, but.
I think you're just like, let's see how much you'll kill it. Yeah. Like he seems like a fucking crazy person. Like, honestly, like
he sounds evil.
He's evil. Let's see. Sure. Like, this is some. Yeah. It sounds like fucking. But it's, stuff that was reserved for like the 1940s Germany. This kind of science.
Isn't that where we think that MKUltra stems from? From like paperclip and Nazi science.
It's probably not that difficult. Yeah, to draw a line from any of the any of like the secret. The
experiments they were doing.
Yeah, yeah, experiment programs that, you know, very took human life.
Yeah, when they're like, we need 150 people for this experiment. Oh, they all died? We need 150 more.
Well, okay. The interesting thing too, like, is when you look at German, like when they, I remember looking into this a while ago, but like when they're writing English, like translating from English to German, when they make the C sound, they use a K. So you look at that, it's a mind control ultra.
MK?
Oh.
You know, like that's fucking.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm fucking grasping at straws here, but.
Yeah. Hey. People have grasped at less straws.
But when you think about, like, it's interesting, Brayden. It's like, so did they accidentally create a supervillain in Charles Manson and gave them implanted powers in him to use those?
That was not an accident.
Or did they do this on purpose? And it's like, why? So at this point in time, you know, what is the government fighting against the most, right? The fucking leftists, the hippie movement, and the anti-war movement, right? So what are we going to do to destabilize that? Well, let's turn a bunch of fucking hippies into suicidal maniacs and demonize them.
Dude, and there's, and like, I just want to point out really quickly that the parallels to this, if we're going to say that, like, hey, this was government, you know, not only helped Charles Manson pull this off, but maybe had more of a hand in it than we think to pull off this kind of, to pull off these murders that basically scared the nations. The hippies after were vilified, like, holy, they're crazy drug-fueled murderers, right? All of them.
Well, like when you look into we're not going to get into it because we love Dan and we don't want him to go anywhere. We will get into this in an episode of Daddies and Baddies. We're going to get into the fucking gruesome details at some point.
We're talking about where the blood was coming out of
everywhere. Stay tuned. But these murders were fucked. Like, it's...
Well, you tell people who don't know, like, it ended with Charles Manson, not himself, but his followers breaking into, what's her name, Tate?
Sharon Tate's house, where she shared with... Fuck, I got all the names written down. But basically, Sharon Tate, who is a famous actress at the time, popular, pregnant. She was married to Roman Polanski, who is a famous piece of shit director.
Yeah,
who likes marrying children. Yeah. He's a fucking garbage person. He treated her like garbage too. she shared a house with a few other, like Terry Melcher, who was, I think his mom was Doris Day. He helped produce the Beatles, or not the Beatles, the Beach Boys. And there was a famous famous hairdresser lived there. A few other people lived in this house. And Manson supposedly, I'm going to get into a little bit more details into this when I get into the prosecutor, but sent them to this house to murder them. Manson didn't murder anybody. Yeah, but when he did, he was very intent on the fact. He's like, when you do it, make it witchy. Make it fucking crazy. And what they decided to do was they wrote, you know, dye pigs and shit like that in their blood. And their murders were extremely, extremely gruesome. Yeah. We won't get into much.
They killed seven people over two nights.
Yeah. And then the LaBianca, LaBianca family is the other ones that they killed.
So this is the Tate LaBianca murders, which I know at, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And this sparked fear, like instantly. It turned the nation against all of a sudden you look at hippies and you're like, fuck, is this drug fueled hippie going to murder me? And I just want to point out, like, if we're drawing the line that maybe the government or our three letter agency was involved in helping or aiding Charlie Manson in
destabilizing the hippie movement.
Well, no, not even destabilize, but like just giving these people the tools and the push they needed to do this kind of act. Maybe they didn't realize the murder was going to happen, but like that tactic of using a vulnerable group and turning them into extremists is used today still by law enforcement.
Cult leader.
Dude, we had in 2015, just to paint a picture that like, I don't think it's crazy to say that law enforcement or some sort of agency had a hand in this. In 2015 in Canada, the RCMP got charged with entrapment because they found two people online, John Nuttall and Amanda Cordy, and these two people had just turned to Islam. One of them had made some anti-Western posts, right? And the RCMP, using a Mr. Big operation, connected them with another undercover RCMP who basically taught them how to make bombs, gave them the supplies to make bombs, told them where to plant the bombs, gave mm-hmm. them rides to pick up the bomb parts, gave them rides in court, it was revealed like these two people, ex-heroin junkies that they used, were reluctant the entire time. And the RCMP was like, oh, you're doing this today. And they actually got them to plant pressure cooker bombs outside of Parliament and then arrested them. Right?
We got them.
And you're like,
we got them.
Mark it up for the good guys. And then like when this came out in court, they're like, these people did not have the means to do this. They did not have those ideas. Everything came from the RCMP. So it's like, and this is in 2015.
They're trying to get a bigger terrorist budget.
Yeah, it's MA Ultra.
Yeah. And it's so like when we're just pointing, like, because some people are like, oh, you know, it's crazy to think that a three-letter agency would kind of push them in that direction. I'm like, it's not. It happens. Like these kind of Mr. Big things like are now mostly illegal in the States and in Canada, but they were used fucking widely at this time.
Well, and it's funny because so like those people, they became, you basically have to slam the door shut at some point. And they did do that with Charlie Manson after these two situations. And they had to, like, the fact that he wasn't, they had proven the fact that he wasn't there at the Tate house when it happened, right? Tex Watson was the one that did the majority or all the killings. And then the Bugliosi, or not the Bugliosi, it's the LaBianca house. He supposedly tied them up earlier and left and then sent Tex Watson and the rest of them there to do the murders. But at the end of the day, when they go to prosecute this guy, so they get, you have Vincent Bugliosi, okay? He's the guy that's behind Helter Skelter, the book, probably the guy that's created the official narrative for this, right? Relatively unknown before this event. And then he gets chosen to be the lead prosecutor in the biggest court case in LA history up until like what fucking OJ Simpson probably, right? Like this is the biggest of all time. And basically, if you don't know what Helter Skelter is, Manson believed that there was going to be a race war And he wanted to incite the race war because he'd been getting messages from the Beatles' White Album and the song Helter Skelter. Fact, yep. He was told that he was going to be the savior of the world. And once this race war started, he would take his family and he'd hide them down in the bottom of a pit in the desert. And then the blacks, is what he said, the blacks will win the race war. And then Manson and his family are going to come out of this pit. And he would then become the leader of the blacks because he is
the superior. Great white black.
Yeah, his well, he believed that his genes were superior, his family would be superior, and the black people would be easier to manipulate.
And the black people would love him for it.
Yeah. They would just, all of a sudden, they'd forget about the race war they just won.
So according to Bugliosi, the prosecutor, Manson dispatched Watson, Atkins, Bruner, Kremwinkel, and Sabian to these houses, right? The previous house of Terry Melcher, which is the one that Sharon Tate's currently living in, right? And he was hoping that, you know, the murders of these nice, famous white people, you know, they tried to frame it, make it witchy, to make it look like it was done by Black Panther, supposedly, would incite this race war, right? And like, I don't know, it's crazy to me to think that like this random prosecutor with no big cases or anything like this prior gets awarded this case, the biggest one of all time, until you find out that he was compromised.
Oh, like, yeah, man, bought and paid for.
And utterly fucking compromised. Like,
yeah.
Dude, corrupt just prior to this, the core. This guy's fucking, he's a psychopath. So one of my favorite parts about this is in the front row of this entire, in every single one of these court hearings, he had his own author sitting in the front row writing his book. Like, they had already started his book, which would completely, like, he would get him disbarred today. I think it's the first time anyone's ever tried that. But gets even weirder. So before this case, relatively recently, before this case, Bugliosi's wife gets pregnant. Okay, it's his first child. And he somehow gets it in his mind that the milkman has impregnated his wife. No joke. He thinks the milkman is the father of his man. Of his child.
Ramp it back.
So then he goes completely off the fucking rails. He brings in investigators from the DA's office and says, hey, this guy's a lead suspect in a murder investigation. You guys need to tail him 24/7. He starts calling this guy's wife repeatedly. He has them trailed. He fucking picks up this guy's kids from school, takes them out, buys them toys, and drops them off and like waves to the milkman and his family. Right? Like this, like harasses these people over fucking years because he says that this guy's, and he had, like, there's no evidence, there's no nothing. He's, you know, he's demanding a paternity test. Like, it's completely out of nowhere. And then he ends up like, and this, there's all record of this. And then they end up choosing him to be the lead prosecutor in the Manson case. And then like, it's not even the worst thing he did. Like, he beat up one of his fucking, he was having an affair with a woman that he got pregnant, told her to go get an abortion. She refused because she's a Catholic. So he fucking beat the shit out of her and held her captive in her fucking house for like, I don't know how long, for a few days. Like, this guy is by all means a world-class piece of shit.
Didn't now, like, in Tom O'Neill writes about Chaos, didn't he uncover that as he got the case and he was going to be the prosecutor of the Manson case, that he fired another prosecutor in his office early on to finding out that he was going to be the prosecutor. And then that prosecutor that worked closely with him, that they were good friends before and after, became the lead defender of Charlie Manson.
No, not Charlie Manson, Susan Atkins.
Oh, yes. One of the Manson family. Atkins,
yeah.
Right? And it's just feeding him information the entire time. Like that is... You can't be in the prosecutor's office, get this case, and then just jump to defense. Like, this fucking big red flags.
Got what they wanted from this man, from the Manson family, or realized that they created an uncontrollable monster and was like, we got to get rid of these fucking people. We got to make sure, like, open and shut case, these people are going to jail forever. Especially when it's like the only person that we really know that, like, I think it was Susan Atkins admitted to doing some stabbing, and then she redacted
recanted it.
But the only person that we really know that did the either murders, the Tate or LaBianca murders, was Tex Watson.
Yeah.
That's it. Right. But yet they took this whole family out for it, including.
Well, Manson. and let's be honest here. If this has anything to do with a three letter agency or MK Ultra and Manson is directly linked with Jolly West or, you know, any kind of shady, if there's any kind of direct link to them, they've got to take him down instantly. Like we cannot have this guy. We've got to make this guy seem so fucking crazy that, you know, there is no way anyone will believe anything he ever said. Right.
Which, you know, shaving your head and carving a swastika into your fucking forehead. Like you look at the actual trial themselves, the female members of the Manson family were like skipping up and down and singing and screaming and shaving their heads during the trial, right? Like fucking they crazy. Looked like they were fucking dosed on LSD during the fucking trial.
Or they're just fried forever from how much they've done.
But I don't know. It's there's other like prolific criminals that state that they were, you know, tested on in MKUltra. Like you look at Whitey Bulger, right? He's been a fucking long proponent of being part of MKUltra.
What a fucking crazy thing.
It's insane, man. And then like the Jack Ruby shit just blows my mind to pieces.
The Jack Ruby shit to me is the biggest smoking gun, because what was the commission that was hired for that? The Warren Commission. They weren't even told that Jolly West had, you know, the information that Jolly West had sent this correspondence, that he had the ability to weaponize LSD and he could erase people's mind. And he had written prior to the meeting with Jack Ruby that he could make people insane with a dose. Right.
But not only that too, it's like, why for the life of anybody, you can never understand why he fucking shot Oswald. Like it never makes any sense.
No.
What was he? Oh,
Jackie Kennedy. He didn't want her to have to go through a trial.
Yeah, like it's like, no, Jack Ruby was a fucking Manchurian candidate. He was they controlled his brain to take out Oswald, and then they made him fucking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the smoky gun is that every single person that talked to Jack Ruby was like, oh, I don't remember. And then they'd be like, we actually think he's lying. He's bullshit. And then like, and fucking Jolly West is like, let me give it a shot. Nope, he is crazy. Holy shit. And everyone after that's like, wow, this guy, what happened to him? And he died 2 years later, just fucking insane, just like the entire way through. So like, he obviously got a fucking elephant dose of LSD, right? And the old fucking handshake, instead of the buzzer, Jolly West just fucking dosed you with a insanity dose of LSD. And then that was
Doesn't that remind you of fucking the Scarecrow, like Jonathan Crane doing his little session with Falcone, I think it is, in Batman Begins, where he's like, yeah, he's crazy, after he sprays him with the fear gas.
Yeah.
Literally just like that.
It's the same shit, man. The
Manchurian candidate thing makes sense, like the mind control thing, but like it would have to be like not, like he wasn't on there's no way he was on a high dose LSD when he did it, because right after he almost seemed coherent. Like, oh, where am I? What did I do? Yeah. What did I do? It'd have to be, he was being mind controlled in a different way. Like the LSD allows you to hack the mind and then some type of electrical signal or sound or something will change you into doing it. Because if he was on that much LSD while he killed him, it would have been completely apparent.
He'd be
that
fucking Z-bop.
It would be incoherent. There's no way he would be like, I didn't do it. Where am I? He would be in fucking space. He would have no idea where he was.
Well, they must have perfected some type of dose, or maybe there's a whole component of this that we're missing.
That's what I mean. You're saying Manchurian candidate, like someone that can be controlled to do something without knowing they're doing it, like through either drug or manipulation or something else, maybe to do with LSD originally, but they figured out something in order to hack a brain.
Dude, they fucking blackmail. Imagine they blackmail Jack Ruby. They blackmail them like, hey, listen, we're coming. This is what's going to happen. You go and shoot this guy. And don't worry, we'll fucking take care of everything. And then when they take care of everything, that's just, they come and make him insane. They fucking LSD him after the fact.
Well, so they did, though. I can't remember if it was West or Gottlieb, but one of the big areas of study is the way that LSD affects different people differently, right? Like there's some people who they'll do LSD and it's just completely like a recreational experience, have a good time, done. But the same dose to a different person ends up with that fucking giant, like the death of ego and a you know, you're basically a new person after you have a whole new set of beliefs and all, you know, like they were definitely, I remember reading something about how like they were seeing like the different people were reacting differently to like similar doses.
But maybe that's why some of these dosed kids, when they tried to, the Manson family tried to get these kids and shit, and they dose them and stuff, and they'd be like, they would report it. It's like, you have to be a certain, you know what I mean? Like different doses, it doesn't work on certain people, but then you dose some people and they're super susceptible to like, listen and be like, yeah, this makes fucking perfect sense.
Fucking licking
to me.
Windows and shit.
Yeah. The snozzberries. Snozzberries, man. But like, you know, maybe, and then that's the thing. That was the key for Manson, is he just kept these people under like a prescribed dose by Jolly West to do these things. And there was a goal. Like these murders and this act, like, there was three-letter agencies that wanted to, you know, hurt the hippie movement. They wanted to do that, and they did. That was... Well,
just like they did the Black Panthers and the Black Power movements. And
right? We know they did these things. There's documents to it. So it's like, it's not that much of a stretch to think that there was some sort of, you know, connection between Manson and the CIA and through MKUltra and Jolly West, right? Through these compartmentalized avenues that were kind of pushing him in the direction. Because like, how the fuck else can you explain that motherfucker never goes back to jail? Like, if they put him back to jail for that parole breach, he's not out to do these things.
Well, yeah. Another thing too about like, so you said that ranch, right? What'd you call that ranch?
Spawn Ranch.
So Spawn Ranch so a lot of this information about the CIA and Jack and Manson comes from Tom O'Neill's book, right? Chaos.
Yes.
And in that book, he says like one of his main points is why he thinks the agencies are an agency or multiple agencies are in on it is because that ranch, they knew they were there, they were surveilling them. So if they had that much surveillance on them and they kind of knew what they were doing, and yet they let these multi-day murders happen anyway.
Yeah.
So I think I'm pretty sure in that book when he got into that story, he didn't want to do it, right? He didn't really want to research it. And when he found out that, oh no, they did know that they were here, they were watching them, and the murders happened anyway, it kind of like clicked for him. He's like, oh, okay. And then he went on a 20-year fucking bender of
dude, 20 years to write this book.
20 years.
It got so bad for him that what was the prosecutor's name again?
Bugliosi.
Bugliosi. When O'Neill fucking confronted Bugliosi and like showed him like all the documents and basically was like, hey, I know you fucking planted a person on defense. I know you lied in court. I know you made, I have people that have now written accounts that you made them perjure themselves in court to paint your narrative. Like, what do you think about that? And he's like, I'll fucking kill you. I'll fucking kill you. And Tom O'Neill's like, I was scared for my life from 2006 until he died 2015 because like Bugliosi like,
died.
Bugliosi died. Yeah. And then he was like, hey, I feel a little better now. But he's like, from that confrontation where he was just like, I'm going to make your life a living fucking hell. And he tried to do everything in his power to kill Tom's book. And like, and just like, I mean,
Tom
his
did
life.
A lot to do that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I, you know what? I could listen to that guy. He should do his own podcast. I could listen to him for fucking
he's
hours.
Good. He's a good speaker.
He's super entertaining. Like, he's just a fucking beauty, man. Like,
well, it's because he has so much interesting information on shit that doesn't already make sense.
But he's so well-spoken too. And he's funny. And he's just, it's super entertaining. Listen, like, I really enjoyed listening to that guy talk. Really.
But like, for me, it's just like, I think, you know, after, you know, listening to Tom O'Neill's works, reading some excerpts of the book, I have no doubt in my mind that that Charlie Manson was created and he was pushed in a direction that was beneficial to outside parties that wanted him.
Super normal to go from antisocial to cult leader, charismatic cult leader that runs fucking everybody's shit. Like, that's normal. Yeah. Yeah, your whole personality change, everything. Just
here's my question though. Here's my question. Cause we know like and that correspondence from Jolly West is fucking damning. But like in it, he says, like, I can implant memories in people that they do not know are not their memories. He says that in correspondence. So part of me even wonders if they handpicked Manson. They're like, he's a little bit charismatic and then he's having these sessions. And do they just make him? Do they implant these ideas into him with this LSD?
They had 7 years to test on him in jail.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
They turned him into the Charles Manson that we know within those 7 years in jail.
Right? And then they let him out. And then they're like, okay, well, let's see if we can manipulate him and push him to where we and what he wanted to. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the end game for them, they were like, ooh, them.
they wrote in their blood.
Yeah, that's
not. Stabbed a pregnant 14 times? That's
not what we wanted. We didn't want that. Whoops.
Yeah. Anyways, yeesh. On to the next.
Yeah. All right, let's kill the president.
That's fucking
but I
wild.
Mean, that's the part for me is like, I'm like, I do not know based on like the correspondence from Jolly West is like, was Manson not 100% created? Like he is literally, like we talk about, I talked about the couple, the RCMP entrapped. They fucking turn those people extreme. And those people are drug addicts. They're vulnerable. And to be honest, that's what Charlie Manson was.
They use heroin. LSD?
They used heroin before. But like, that's what Charlie Manson was. Listen, we've all gone to school with, a troubled kid. They're dumb as paint. You know what I mean? The kids, I could have pointed out the kids that were dumb as paint. And
kind
I was
kid
like,
that's eating pencil crayons.
Yeah. I looked at him and I went, I remember going like, there was a kid. I don't know. He's a huge time prolific offender in Kelowna now, but like I was in grade six with him. And I remember we had like grade six graduation and he's like, my dad's going to be so proud. No one in my family's made it this far. And I was like, in my head, I was like, oh my God, this kid's fucked. And then he's like a prolific offender now. And I'm like, but that's like, that was a Charlie Manson dude. This guy was vulnerable. He was a vulnerable
dude.
And
he was my little brother.
But Charlie Manson was a vulnerable youth who turned into a vulnerable adult who had no structure or anything. Like, he is a perfect candidate for someone like to manipulate in these kind of situations. So, you know, did they create their own monster, or, you know, did they get out of him what they want, exactly what they wanted? Right. And then they just fucking dose him a little extra. The guy's fucking insane off his rocker. Right. They have Jolly West come in there, pat a dose on his back. And then, you know, he's fucking carving swastikas in his forehead. Like, he's crazy. Right.
The Beatles.
Yeah. It's fucking wild, man. That's a crazy time for that kind of shit to go on. Cause
it's the last time we had any record of it. Now it's just gone. They're good at fucking sweeping this shit on the rug now.
Well, dude, yeah, it makes you think when you have these, you know, like, fuck, man, you know, not to get too crazy, but sometimes you have these fucking extremists in the United States and other places that do these things in the name of, you know, a foreign adversary. And it makes me think like, that's weird. Are these people crazy? Or what's the background of this? Have they been, how did they get, how did they become like extremists? And then it scares me too. Cause I'm like, if the fucking three letter agencies here were doing this, CIA or whoever was doing this here, you know, imagine other countries, you know, foreign adversaries that, you know, maybe have the same ability and they're fucking doing it. It's crazy to me. I mean, the whole Charlie Manson thing, after looking at it through this lens of MK Ultra, paints a completely different narrative for me, to be honest. My conspiracy brain goes fucking full time. And I'm like, this had government involvement 100%.
There's no other option now. That's it. 100% full send.
Like, I do not believe for a second that, because the old narrative in me, I was like, oh, you had this crazy guy that convinced all these people to murder people. And now I'm like, no, you had the government that fucking fueled these guys with drugs and LSD and fucking mind controlled him into convincing other people with varying degrees of drugs to murder people to push a narrative that the government wanted at the time, or three later agencies wanted to basically shut down movement. It's fucking just crazy. That's my final thoughts. And what do you guys think?
Dan's been quiet. I'm ready to hear.
Dan, what do you think?
I think Dan's about to be activated, and we're next. Yeah. We're on his list.
No.
The Dan Shurian candidate.
Most of the stuff that is put forward in the book is the Tom O'Neill's book is put stuff in there. Yeah, I mean, that's what he wrote it to do, is just to look at the these like labyrinthine connections that kind of spill out into the, you know, the era that was the 1960s San Francisco, where a lot of different pieces kind of fall into place and intersect there. You know, the Haight-Ashbury Clinic, and then you have, you know, it is the UCLA, all these places that were specializing in things, where specialize in studies that, yeah, like intersect with some of the a lot of the stuff that MK Ultra was trying to do in their projects, like, you know, things trying to break down individual personalities, you know, and using, and, you know, using the tools that were hallucinogens, you know, especially as LSD, and, you know, and then they were working on these things there in that place and studying these things in depth, especially, you know, MK Ultra also taking advantage of, you know, prisons and been there. So, you know, is it a possibility that whether, you know, in the book, you know, Tom O'Neill puts forth a convincing case to some extent that, you know, was Manson either a product of that, or was he exposed to some of either the techniques that they got? Like, either he got in, they took him in, and then they're like, you know,
created a monster.
And then, but he took that stuff that he learned, or, you know, maybe he had contact with some of these people, and they just kind of discussed at some point, just sat down and talked. And he's like, yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that's good stuff. I could work with that. Because, I mean, he's not like a stupid person. Like, Charles Manson, you know, in and out and stuff like that. He's not, you know, it's like...
What was his reading comprehension level?
Yeah.
I
think his only education he got was from fucking prison.
Yeah.
I was just like, enough to get in and out. Like, it's just like, you know, he probably heard some stuff and he's like, yeah, that sounds like...
Definitely hearing stuff because he definitely wasn't reading stuff. Or writing stuff.
Well, he compensated. Maybe he compensated for that by being a street smart.
By a great musician or really handsome?
No. Well, he wasn't gifted in other areas, so he just had
talented musician? No, not that either.
Tall?
No. Yeah, no.
And he didn't have a lot going for him.
He had his hair.
Yeah. He did have a nice head of hair.
Yeah. Nice hair, though.
Nice hair. there's a... that's probably something that, you know, Tom O'Neill's whole goal is to get us to re-examine that, or people to kind of take a look at these connections or whatever. Yeah, like a lot of the stuff, that, especially the I know, which is almost like blatant incompetence of like some of the trials and stuff like that, and the people who are dealing with the cases is...
it's not incompetence. Like, wow, it's corruption.
It's purposeful.
It's corruption.
Dan, pour some gasoline on this conspiracy fire and light the shit on fire. Let's
burn
go.
It up. All I'm saying is this. You have these three people in history in 1967. Right? Foster, fucking Jolly West, and Manson. And you just put them all in the same... who's parole Foster? Officer? In the Height Clinic.
Roger Smith.
Yeah. And you just put all three of those people in the same fucking building.
Right? Yeah, government funded.
That's government funded. And they're all, you know, they all are researching kind of loosely based things that then transpire. Hey, listen, it's probably all just a fucking coincidence, right? Yeah. Don't look under the rug, guys.
You know what I think?
When did this happen?
What do you think?
I think that governments or leaders through of all human history have been trying to find the best ways to control the masses of people. And I think at this time, with this new substance, lysergic acid, they thought that maybe they thought, oh, if we can get it in the water supply, maybe if we can do this, will our people be more easily manipulated into whatever the direction the government wants to go?
Can we tell them it's good for their teeth? Put it in the water.
I'm just saying. But then I think in the end, MKUltra stuff, they're like, this is not feasible on a large scale. And I think they've moved, I think government or deep state or whoever you want to say have moved on to realize that there's better means of manipulating people than LSD.
Pandemics.
Pandemics. Using the pandemic through social media, I think social media is the new one. I think they realize that social media is the most powerful mind control tactic out there, because if you have one way you want to spin it, you put that out there, but then you also put the complete opposite way and you push both those motherfuckers. You push them both.
That's what they did with COINTELPRO.
You pay for the six day, $42 ad push on either one of those motherfucking stories.
And I think that people for all of human history have been trying to control groups of people, and LSD through cults and stuff, the Manson and others. It works to a degree. I think they've realized that it just doesn't work on such a massive scale, and they've moved on. I don't think there is MKUltra dosing going on anymore. I just think they've realized that probably the human body is more frequency based, and manipulation through media or sound or like that kind of information is more easily, you can use that to manipulate people more easily. And I think that's where they've went. But at the time, using a cult leader to see it like mind control through drugs, I don't think is out of the realm of it. I mean, we're doing MKUltra on people. They had Midnight Climax, they had all these things, and then just using like, okay, we got this one guy, he's got nothing going for him. Let's see, can we get this? If we can get this guy to control a group of people, I mean,
anyone
can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of what it seems like. This doesn't make any sense.
Guy can't even read, but can he control minds?
Yeah.
With enough LSD, anyone can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking wild. Let us know your thoughts. Have you been mind controlled by anyone?
You called this Colton recently?
Have you mind controlled yourself?
If you're about to commit a 2-day murder, stop now. Yeah, you heard it here.
Yeah, don't do it.
Rethink those things.
Rethink that.
Don't dose elephants with LSD and don't murder people.
Are you about to take more than, are you about to take 2,500 milligrams of LSD? Do not do it.
It's not effective.
I think the average dose is like 200 nanograms on one of those little tabs of paper, which that's like thousands of those papers at once. So don't do that.
No.
Not going to end well for you.
It's like 3 foot, like fruit by the foot things, just like shoving in the elephant's mouth.
Fucking got Babor just going nuts. Like,
that fucking poor elephant, man.
Yeah, dude.
Goddamn.
What's with elephants? Didn't fucking Edison too, like, electrocute one? Fucking proving the danger.
Yeah, because they're so smart. I don't know. Maybe it's got their brains similar to a fucking human brain.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
They're just massive, though. What do you do with the carcass after you got to dispose of this 5,000 pound
feed it to the locals?
Send it to a local butcher. Elephant meat.
Is that a thing? Do people eat elephant?
Probably. I'm sure they do did at one time.
Woolly mammoths at some point.
They eat fucking giraffes. They eat all that type of
stuff. I don't even know. I mean, most of the time, elephants have been a protected species like ever since I know.
I think people have tried to eat everything on the planet. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how we found out shit was poisonous and we died from it.
Yeah.
There's some poor sucker who ate some shellfish. You're like, shouldn't eat that. Yeah. That guy's dead now. Mark that one down.
Put those back.
Don't do that one.
Get the list.
Yeah, but what if you boil it first? Steve died of it, but yeah, but what if we boil it first? Maybe that'll work.
What if we cut this fish? What if we cut this pufferfish horizontal?
Yeah, if we cut it real fast.
That's a crazy one to think, because the pufferfish is like, there's only a single specific way to neutralize
the poison so you don't die.
For it not to kill you. And I'm like, how many fucking people did they fucking feed that to?
And they still get it wrong.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
Some people still die.
Still go to the hospital. Yeah.
What the fuck is
that? They probably don't die anymore. You're right. But yeah, you're still getting sick.
Let us know. Do Chaos by Tom O'Neill. Check out his interviews and stuff. He makes compelling arguments. He was on Joe Rogan, if you like podcasts. Tons of good podcasts with him.
Hope you like podcasts. You listen to this one.
Yeah. So go check it out. Let us know what you think. Has that changed your narrative on Charlie Manson? What are your thoughts? Let us know in the comments. Shoot us an email, alientheorists@gmail.com. Let us know.
Booyah. All right. If you're not supporting the show, you want early access to the case files, ad free, all the bonus stuff, you got to go to alientheorist.com. You got to hit that support tab. Support your boys, support your favorite podcast. This week's newest supporters, we got Gordon Slamsley, Emma Brown, Niven. Checking. checking.
That was the best reading I've ever heard in my life.
Vanity? It's just vanity, I'm pretty sure.
That's Zell reading a name to be like, are they trying to
Rosella, Gillybird, and Joshua Merman.
Let's go, Merman.
Thank you very much for supporting the show. Best of both worlds right there, Josh.
And as we always say at these things, at the end, keep those eyes on the skies. Peace. Be an after hours.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.